You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It is Thursday. And if it's Thursday, it does mean that Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny join me. So joining me from the great state of Texas is Tim Lynch. Timmy, what's up?
Not much, Matt. Glad to be here again.
All right. And joining me from the not-so-great of California is a little bit under the weather, just so everybody knows, Jeff Kenny. What's up, man?
Yeah, I'm just pulling out of having a little bit of flu, and here in sunny and expensive California.
So, like, which version of flu? The stomach flu, the influenza coughing version? What are you doing?
The coughing and hacking and not being able to sleep one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Let's talk about Iran again. It's been about a week since the last time we got together. Hanging chads, as you guys have watched that thing, there's been some interesting stuff that's happened relative to Europe. In an interview a couple nights ago, Boris Johnson made some interesting comments relative to a Trump deal. So, Timmy, do you want to charter the Droney McDrone flight and get us going?
Sure. You know, last week I had said it was going to come out that plane was shot down because that was rather obvious.
Right.
I was not anticipating the results or the consequences of how that broke. And essentially, if we look at Iran, since we've been paying attention to it since the summer, you know, by November they had all those protests and they seemed to have gotten past that. Then we whack Soleimani and they have a national unifying moment that lasts 24 hours. Before it turns into rage at them again. So this sequence of events that transpired between us and Iran is unbelievably damaging to them. It's unbelievably beneficial to us. And the reaction from the Democrats is to me, it's almost enraging that they're talking about the War Powers Act and whatnot. I'm getting a little bit tired of that kind of that talk. But it was really nice to see the reaction of the Iranian people. We've never been in a position where we, the USA, we keep on coming out ahead of these things. It's remarkable.
All right. So that's the aftermath of them. That's part of it. Them shooting down the Ukrainian flight. Jeff, any part of what you've seen in the last week that has kind of broken squelch and caught your attention?
Yeah. First of all, speed of the reaction and the vehemence of the people, you know, the different demonstrations are going on, that we're not against the United States and we're not stepping on the Israeli flag. This is against our government. It was so rapid. I was like shocked by that. But what I think that means is that there's entities within the government signaling to these people, now's the time, it's okay to do this, because there's problems. Like this Soleimani guy, they're burning his posters, ripping his posters off the walls and stuff the day after the, you know, government-directed mourning was over. And so the other thing, that tells me they're getting signaled by factors in the government to do that. The other thing that today kind of confirmed that to me was their foreign minister got up there and said, you know, we basically had a reaction by people who were angry at being lied to by us by a couple days. I've never heard an Iranian official.
Yeah, hey, Jeff, explain that. Explain what that guy said, because I'll tell you what, to me, it's confusing when you first hear it, because it's something that is so extraordinary. You're like, wait a minute, what did he say? So explain to everybody what God said.
Well, he said, and let me just dredge for my, I just saw it today, but he said, we had, for the last few days, demonstrations across the country by our people who are angry because the government, we've been lying to them for the last couple of days. He actually said that. Now, this is the same guy who, if you remember last week, when they were getting ready to do their proportion, he was stressing, we're going to do a proportional strike against the United States that is proportional and not designed to be escalatory. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Same guy.
Right.
And then he says this. So I'm thinking that these guys, there's some indicator that now that the big bad wolf is in a couple of pieces there outside of BIAP, that they can speak a little bit. And the other thing, listening to Rouhani today and watching him, he said that Europe, you know, that right now in the Middle East, American soldiers are in danger. Europe, I'm talking to you. Don't let your soldiers get in danger. Why don't you just leave the Middle East in peace and not in war? You know, just because it's a smart thing to do. And that's it struck me. And in between that, the Europeans had said, particularly the Brits, said, "Hey, look, if you guys are going to go back on your part of the nuclear deal you made with us, then we're going to go and reestablish sanctions that we originally had. That would even make the pain they're suffering now from sanctions that much worse." So, like Timmy was saying, the Iranians are rocked back on their heels. You know, they're like George Foreman in the eighth round against Muhammad Ali. You know, bouncing off the ropes a little bit.
Because exactly as Jeff said, the one important part to remember is there's no alternative government for Iran. There's no person or movement or any suggestion that alternative government and Iran.
No loyal opposition.
Those guys are going to be there. Yeah, those guys are going to be there for a long time, and they're smart enough to allow the people to let the steam off. They've never done that. It's unbelievable. That the signal that they're sending, because we're just hammering them, and that joint comprehensive plan of action that would have allowed them nuclear weapons. I did some research on that, and a lot of what we think about that was wrong, but I don't need to go into that kind of detail because I think that being against it permanently is the correct move for world peace.
I want to talk about, I want to get your opinion, and since the last time we talked, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and I've seen some other people say, no, the Iranians intended to do us harm with those missile strikes. Do you believe that, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I think they, I have to say, I think the way they did this thing, they shot them onto a base. But they didn't really. It wasn't done with the same singleness of purpose as that truck bomb that hit the Marine BLT in Lebanon in 1983.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, here's what I think. And I saw
have an address on it. You know?
Well, and here's what I think. I think that evidently the president back channeled through the Swiss embassy in Tehran.
Right.
Do not retaliate against us. Right, and I believe that the Iranians back channeled to him, right? Let us shoot these things in the dirt for our internal consumption, and we're done with it. Because let me just tell you, we all know those things are too accurate.
Yeah.
Those things are accurate, too accurate to fall in the dirt and not hurt anybody. They're just too accurate. And so, and then and it's not like they could not if they missed with that, if they wanted to kill Americans, they could not have dialed up, right?
Right.
Rockets and whatever that the Iranian militia control all over Iraq.
Then so, that goes to what Milley was saying, the chairman. Why would he say that then? Is he just used to lying to the American people?
I don't believe in coincidences. And they have too much capability in the region. If they wanted to kill Americans, I mean, they could have combined arms that stuff. So I just over there do not believe in coincidences. And so to me, I believe that was a made for internal consumption event. And if you watched what they did internally, what they did was they fired the missiles to great fanfare, death to the great Satan, striking a blow against the United States. And that's what they announced inside the country, and then, crickets. crickets, right. Crickets. And it's like, we're all, okay, when's the next shoe going to fall? Right? Well, the next shoe hasn't fallen yet. And they have, as Jeff has said repeatedly, they have a lot of capability in the region, right? In the region. So, anyway, Timmy, your thoughts on that?
No, my experience with rockets in 2004 were them volleying 122s into the green zone, and those were pretty dumb. I mean, they very rarely hit anything, but obviously what the Iranians shot was bigger. It's like I said, it's very interesting to watch this play out, and it's annoying the response about Trump creating instability. It's just annoying the hell out of me.
All right, I want to talk about the European response because a lot of what the Iranians have done has been their attempt to drive a wedge between the United States and Europe, and desperately pleading with Europe to come to our relief as this crazy man Trump, you know, asks for the unreasonable, you know, and please help us. And now what they've gotten by virtue of downing that Ukrainian, you know, airliner and saying that we're not going to cooperate with the JPOA is, you could have tipped me over with a feather when I read this one, you know, and that was European sanctions. Yeah. And, like, it's the exact opposite of the narrative. Timmy?
It's worked. Not so well. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I feel like I'm jinxing. I've never seen us have a run this strong.
Yeah. All right, Jeff.
I'm not saying Jordy McJone face has anything to do with it. I'm away with that story.
Please don't, Jeff. You were talking about this a second ago, but and we could segue to kind of Boris Johnson's comments from two nights ago about, you know, we need to strike the Trump deal. And that would be, you know, hey, you know, to Iran, it's like, look, you know, we have all this economic incentive for you, right? But stand down the nuclear program in a verifiable way, and we'll be more than happy to be your friend, Jeff. I mean, that's essentially what Boris Johnson, he insinuated that was a Trump deal.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about Trump's different than the, it's always been that when something would happen over there, there'd be some kind of conflict. Right away, both the media in America and a lot of the branch of government would be like, oh, my God, something must be done. This, something has happened. Something must be done. This is something. Therefore, we must do it. And usually it was some kind of weird compromise to try to pay homage to our allies and the people we're at odds with, usually the Iranians, and so consequently it was bland and didn't really do anything for anybody and just prolonged whatever crisis was going on until just lack of interest ends a lot of these crises, I think. But this one, President Trump said, this is in our best interest and therefore we will do it. And he killed that guy.
And he evidently said that 7 months ago. It's got to be this under these conditions.
Yes. And so then I think this guy, Boris Johnson, is going, hey, that's a pretty simple way of looking at things. This is in our national interest. And it just so happens here that I believe, Mr. Brexit and all that stuff, that this coincides with the United States. You know, so I'm gonna say this, you know, and whereas you got the guy in Canada, he's the old fashioned guy, you know, even though he's young. Trudeau, he's like, oh, I think that the reason that this airliner was shot down and all these kids was because of the escalation. No, it was shot down because some guy in Iran pushed a button and a missile blew up, two missiles blew up that defenseless airplane. That's it. That's what happened. Don't read any more into it. Don't try and excuse the murderer just for good relations. Don't insult your own dead by doing that. And sometimes it's best to just shut up. And usually President Trump is the opposite of just shut up. But this, he killed this guy, and he's not extrapolating any more beyond that, other than to say, if you want to raise this thing, I got some more whoop ass for you. Other than that, about this, he's not really extrapolating too much.
You know, the Trudeau, to me, I mean, it's like he wants people to know how smart he was. Like,
yeah.
Okay, dude, first of all, if you're doing blackface, right? Like, I don't, you know, and, you know, maybe you, you know, he threw himself on the mercy of the court and said, you know, I was young and stupid. You weren't that young, right?
Right.
Obviously, you're really stupid, but you weren't that young. And he tries. So, to me, he tries so hard to show everybody how smart he is. And then, you know what, at the last G8, right, he's caught, like, talking shit about President Trump when there's cameras everywhere. And you're like, dude, you're the village idiot.
Not too bright.
Yeah, I mean, you don't do that in public. You can, you know, you better be careful when you do it in private, given your level of visibility. And he just comes off to me as weak and lame, you know. And
there was a time that politicians like him, both over, you know, in Europe and in Canada and in the United States, if you were of a certain political bent, you got passes on stuff. They didn't film you doing dumb stuff a lot of times. Those days are gone. There's more than just three networks now. Yeah. And there's always going to be somebody who wants to show somebody else's ass. So you're right, man.
And everybody got a cell phone.
Right. Everybody has a cell phone, too.
Everybody got a cell phone. So, you know, yeah. I mean, so, look, I would say, you know, pretty good advice to a politician. Assume that everything that you're going to say is being recorded.
Colonel Hardy, man.
Never
pass up an opportunity to keep your mouth shut.
Joe Dunford told me that.
Yeah.
And he told me that in Ramadi. He said, Mac, never pass up an opportunity to shut your yap in front of a general officer.
We all heard that from Colonel Hardy when we were lieutenants, man. He was a CO of six Marines.
He was the OPSO at the basic school, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been saying it forever. Since the first time he stuck his dick from.
I worked for him on my CAC as a company commander. That was great fun.
JC Hardy, pretty down to earth, plain spoken dude, man. The other thing about that is I was surprised, honestly, that the Iranians who initially began, I thought, to play the whole, you know, disinformation game and, you know, admit nothing, deny everything, make counter accusations thing relative to the airliner. I was pretty surprised how quickly they turned that around and said, no, we did it. And we're looking into it. We'll have an investigation. You know, I was like, well, again, things you don't normally see. And I see, and to go back to one of Jeff's original comments was, are things that dire inside of Iran that are causing them to behave in a way that we don't normally see them behave?
Right.
And go ahead, Timmy.
I think that's beyond question. And I was talking about something last week regarding their officer corps, and I wanted to stress this. I believe the Iranians can produce some pretty competent officers. There's no question about that. The question is, How do you keep some certain MOSs or occupations from being places where you throw guys who aren't cutting it, you know, like air defense artillery? Because we went to great lengths in the Marine Corps with the breaking the companies down into third, and there weren't too many people in the upper third who wanted to be a Hawk missile battery officer. Matter of fact, there were zero.
Right.
And I remember having to force guys into there from the top third as an SBC, and it was most unpleasant. But we did that because you can't have an MOS that's nothing but guys out of the last 14 positions of their basic school class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Iran can't possibly have a. I don't think anybody does that. So how do you, air defense artillery officers aren't your dumbasses because you need your good guys on the more cutting edge stuff? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. And you can imagine, you know, nervous. But what doesn't make any sense to me is that if they know that they're going to, you know, the sequence of events is they shoot their missiles, right, and then they shoot the airliner down, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So they shoot the missiles. Everybody's nervous about the American retaliation and response. Why are the airliners flying?
Yeah. That's what the Ukrainians said. Why did you let everybody fly?
Yeah, well, if you were going to conduct that kind of operation.
No. Almost all the flights coming out of Dubai that are heading towards any parts of Asia are going to go over Iranian airspace. I mean, that's a gigantic travel corridor. They get money for that stuff, too.
But again, we're talking about, you know, an aircraft that took off from Iran.
Yeah.
No, I get that. They're having normal operations. I mean, I can't explain that. I'm just saying that shutting down the aircraft corridor would have been a major big deal. That would have impacted everybody.
So I don't mean shut down the corridor. I mean that, you know, if we're going to do this and you know, we're going to go to that level, right, why are we allowing civilian airliners to take off?
I mean, how many times did you leave Baghdad when it was taking rocket fire?
None.
Yeah, I didn't.
It was a civilian plane, but yeah, I mean, they kept BIOP operating during the bad days of 2005 to 2008.
Yeah, but when it got bad, they shut that shit down all the time.
Yeah, right. You know, it might be that they're telling one part of the government one thing, and one part another. So, like, you know, the airport, you know, as far as civilian air traffic and everything, they don't say anything. But the other bit else, they say, stand by for heavy rolls. We just hit Al-Assad and Erbil. And so there's some kids standing by for every, or they just did a shift change. And, you know, it's a screw up. Absolutely.
I can't
imagine. And who knows? It might have been some wacko did it on purpose. You know, but.
I think that, you know, overwhelmed and scared, you know, fire.
Yeah.
Or maybe even just incompetent. And, you know, it was supposed to be on manual and it's on automatic. And, I mean, like, what the fuck just happened? Kenny, what did you do? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, oh, shit.
How could you be so stupid? I don't know.
You guys remember from the basic school named Hink, Harry Hink?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. He was a Hawk missile guy. He was telling me a story about the first Desert Storm, where some of the missile batteries thought they had a firing solution, thought they had a bogey, and the squadron commander or whatever, where the battery commander says, "We're never firing one of these missiles live ever. So don't even think about it." They didn't fire, and it was Marine Air that they had toggled somehow. But it was hysterical because he said, "Yeah, our rules are we'll never fire. We'll never shoot these missiles ever because we're too afraid of hitting a friendly." I remember him telling me that. It was just bizarre.
Yeah,
hard to have a lot of pride in your service.
you're
dedicated to, you know, you're like the Gandhi of the MOSs. You know what I mean?
I know, but he goes, yeah, under no conditions are we shooting these damn rockets ever. It was just hysterical.
It's like Mayberry, you know, with Andy Griffith, where Barney only got that one bullet and he kept it in his pocket. it's kind of like that.
The about face they've made. So it's, you know, watching Iran. You know, I echo your guys' sentiments. Pretty interesting watching these days. If you were a betting man, will they bide their time and then have a proxy do something crazy, knowing, you know, that they've received the Vito Corleone admonition from Donald Trump? Or do you think that they will say, hey, look, we reach critical mass with the United States. We need to cool this shit out, and we'll play it a little bit closer to the vest relative to them because they've just clicked off safe. Jeff, what do you think?
I think that, yes, there will be a reaction, and I think the Lebanon wing of Hezbollah already got that warning order.
The Lebanon wing of Hezbollah has that
guys
warning.
In Lebanon have been told, because they're the ones who are making noise. And that might mean that they're not going to do it.
Right.
On the other hand, a lot of times they do make noise because they got a constituency that they have to satisfy.
Right.
They have their base, you know.
Right. No, those are good points, and that was, you know, again, one of the factors that we talked about was there's the demand, right? In the world of the tough guy, if you do not answer in public, you're weak. and they've got to answer in public. But you know, so far we have not seen that, which again is extremely interesting. Tell me your thoughts about that.
I think they would be most interested in a candidate to become president next year, and so
wait. You cut out. Like, what did you just say?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think the Iranians would be interested in a change of administration in Washington, D.C. And to that end, I think they're going to cause as much mischief as they can in order to try to get the drumbeat sounding that Trump has destabilized the region by his precipitous actions. I think it's the only play they've got, because if they have four more years of Trump, they've got problems.
So what do you expect to see relative to retaliation?
All kinds of. I think the sky is the limit. I do believe it's that they want to see something a little bit more dramatic than a few rockets and killing somebody with an IED here or there. I think they're going to try to grab somebody and hold them. Some of the proxies.
Right.
But that's what Jeff and I have been saying that since the summer. It's a matter of time before that becomes true.
Yeah. We'll see because I think. So far, they've taken him at his word. That
yeah.
I'm not going to play the proxy. I'm going to play whack-a-mole proxy with you. That if you harm Americans, right? I'm gonna come for your head. And so, it'll be interesting. Interesting event in Taiwan. While all this was going on, the Taiwanese have a national election for their presidency, and the. If you want to call it the pro-Taiwan candidate, received almost 60% of the vote, and the pro-mainland China candidate received 30-something percent of the vote. I want to say 36-37% of the vote, maybe 38%.
Hong Kong syndrome, man.
Yeah, which led people to talk about the it being a landslide, and that the that the effect of the Hong Kong movement on Taiwan was significant. Jeff, your thoughts on that?
I think that's what it is. I think the Hong Kong thing is, and the reaction to it, which is I think was perceived as muted, is encouraging more independence in that region. And I think that's a manifestation of it there in Taiwan. They're like, hey, we'd rather not have you guys up our ass.
Yeah, interesting. Timmy, your thoughts on that?
It's clear that the Hong Kong thing was connected to Taiwan, and I'm all up to speed because I listened to Grant yesterday, which was awesome when he clicked off safe. But I want to point out, I think the Yellow Vest protests in France, which are ongoing, they're just not being covered as much. The Brexit movement, the election of Trump, all these things indicate to me a gigantic shift in the way of the more traditional elite power centers and the narratives that are being fed by the media, because the media message hasn't changed. I saw Martha Raddatz reporting from Tehran, and she couldn't have written a propaganda script better for the Iranians. Said, just all kinds of questioning about America's role in all this, which it's just so typical of the mainstream press these
days. Talk to me about Taiwan.
Well, I think the Taiwanese are much like other people in other countries, are very nationalistic. They're being inspired by leaders who are watching out for their interests. I think the Taiwanese movement is very positive. My whole visibility on the thing comes from listening to Grant, who's awfully informative. But I also feel that the Taiwanese people's sentiments are the same as the people in France, same as the people in England, the same as the people in a lot of places. And that is much more oriented towards their own countries and less on the globalist agenda. And I think that's for the good. But forces and the countervailing forces come out of the mainstream media.
Right. I think it'll be interesting. I think when you've watched what has happened relative to the United States and China, and that the United States has come out, and yesterday the president signed the trade agreement. But the United States came out of that economic confrontation, right? The bigger nation, right? It came out, you know, the more vibrant, the diverse economy, the stronger economy. And it doesn't look like, and in my opinion, you know, the United States backed China down. Things that China said it wouldn't do, it's now saying, at least saying it, it will address those issues. And so I think it's been interesting. And I think there's nations in the region that have watched the American pivot towards the Pacific militarily and with this deal and said, you know what? You know, as Timmy said, emboldened, because, you know, I talked with Grant about Malaysia going to the UN and saying, hey, they can't annex our shit with their bullshit 9-dash line. And we have an international ruling that says so. You know, help us. You know, this is what the United Nations is supposed to be for. And so I find that really, I think the emboldening, and then, you know, I think to a certain extent, the American, as Grant always phrases it, you know, the United States finally standing up on its hind legs for once. And, you know, the United States doing that, I think emboldens, right, the Chinese, the Hong Kong protesters, the president, right, via his Twitter account, you know, supports them, right? The people in, you know, in Taiwan have seen this bullshit rhetoric that mainland China says we own you, even though it's never owned Formosa or whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? It's this bullshit narrative like the 9-dash line. And so I think there is this kind of, you know, we have long neglected that part of the world, you know, and Obama, I mean, he didn't do shit when the Chinese, you know, grabbed the Paracel Islands and things like that. Didn't do shit. Strongly worded letter of protest. Oh, really? What are you going to do? Roll that up and stick it in my eyes? How are you going to hurt me with it? And so all that kind of shit. I find the events there encouraging, because the only way China will ultimately join the League of Nations, right, in some form of, you know, I didn't want to say equal partnership, but is if they get back down into it. Right. And so I think what the United States has done in the Pacific, what the president has done in the Pacific, you know, specifically with trade agreements, he knows a shit deal. And he looks at these things and says, you got to be shitting me, man. Why are we afraid to use American power, economic, you know, and otherwise, you know, to stand up for our workers, to stand up for our products, to stand up for our economy? And I think that he's taught, you know, I think he's taught people a lesson that you can't take them on. They aren't the behemoth that everybody wants to say they are. They can be taken on. You know, you just got to do it in the right way. So I found that interesting, and I was kind of curious to see what the sentiment in Taiwan would be for the election. And I have to say, probably like everybody else, I was pleasantly surprised. And I think now it's incumbent upon the free nations of the world, you know, to support a free Taiwan and tell the Chinese, ain't going to happen. Right? Don't play that game. You have no historical claim to it. Right, they're free people, and they'll stay a free people. So I hope that comes out of it. I hope that comes out of it. I want to ask you guys, a question about something that I was on the East Coast last week doing post-traumatic winning, and a lot of sergeant majors on the East Coast. And a lot of them are former grunts from the 1st Marine Division who are working in the 2nd Marine Air Wing. And I had a number of conversations about the whole formation thing. And, you know, and it's fun to listen to them because they talk about, you know, the wing's different and you get told that and now you're going to come. And they don't say shit like swing with the wing. But, you know, it's a different organization. They run operations 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's day and night crews. So it's not, you know, it's not the same as an infantry company or battalion or a regiment. And so they get talked about, they get told about this different culture. And then what happens is after they're there for a few months, they click off, say, and they say, no, leadership's leadership, and I'm not having it anymore. Right. And that if you don't have formations, right? PSC McNamara, who runs his suck all day, shows up formation. His uniform looks like shit, and he's standing, right, in his spot in second squad, and he's not saying anything. Now, if he's led by a novice, and I would say somebody who's a first-term Marine, a novice, somebody short of 8 years in the Marine Corps would say is novice. Okay. Now, some people might like that. Some people don't. I don't really give a shit. But there's a fundamental difference between a seasoned staff NCO as they look, right? There's different things going on in formations. You know, something that will spin a junior Marine, you know, somebody with a little bit more experience will look at it and say, I'll take care of that when I get to it. We got to take care of this first, though. And in my mind's eye, I see, you know, during the three formations, you know, my companies used to have, you know, whether I was a lieutenant, a captain, or whatnot, or the Marine detachment aboard the USS Ranger. You know, I see, you know, those jaundiced eyed staff NCOs, a first sergeant leaning against a doorway, smoking a cigarette, and just watching people. And when he saw something that he didn't like, he'd point and say, you come see me after this is over. Right? And all of a sudden, PFC McNamara is walking in to see the first sergeant, and he looks and he says, what's wrong with you? And, you know, PFC McNamara says, my wife left me on Saturday. Now, and, right? And but it's the way you find out about that shit. So if you do it by instant messaging app and you don't see them, yeah. Right? I mean, I just want to throw that out to you. Do you guys see any way that that shit kind of works? Because we're expecting you to self-report when you've got an issue.
No, I see it every day where I'm at. There's a resistance against doing formations. Some of the guys that we put through IOC are, because we put them through IOC, they're like, hey, look, you will have formations. Like the EOTG that I'm in, we're part of now, it's run by a guy named Clay Tipton. I don't know if you guys remember him.
I do.
Yeah, he's outstanding.
Yeah,
he's the OTG guy now. So a lot of the stuff that was going on is cleaned up. There is formations. And just because you got, like, shift work, so you have the night shift formation, but you got to lay your eyes on
hello,
your people.
Right, hello.
Right. And if you're you want to control that as a young officer, I'm going to inspect everybody every Friday at 08. I want a company inspection. You don't have to do it once. Believe me, after that, I never had to do that because I had great first sergeant company gunny and stuff as a company commander. And the same thing when I was a lieutenant. But if you have that issue, you can fix it. And because your staff and shows will respond to the fact that you're saying to them, look, I'm giving you an opportunity here to exercise your leadership. I want to take care of these guys. It's the other half of my mission. It's to accomplish the mission to take care of them. So I want you to help me. So you need to see them. You need to know them. You know, I remember we came back from the first float when I was a second lieutenant. We knew everything about everybody. You know, we're out of LST, but then even when we were back at at Lejeune, and I remember we knew everything. I had like almost half my guys were married, which was a huge change from when I first came in the Marine Corps.
Right.
And half of those half, their wives left them on the float. So it was an openly discussed at formation. You know, before we actually had the formation, they were discussing it. So I remember after we had a company formation, talked to the guys, gave them the don't drink and drive thing. And they came up and they gave me a picture. Sir, this is you got to come to our house. The five guys whose wives left them got an apartment together. So I went out there, and they had pictures on the top row was their wedding picture with them happy and everything. And then underneath, they had a snapshot of them, like, flipping off the camera and, you know, sour looks in their faces. It was the funniest thing. But you know, we were involved in it. We were involved in each other that way, you know?
We had a rule in 2006 when I was in Fallujah among my Marines that if you got dumped, you had to read the letter to everybody that that you got dumped with.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You should have heard that shit.
Or dear Juan.
It was hilarious, right? Yeah. And now you turn something that's really, right, painful, right, you know, you turn it into a group event, and everybody went by and said, hey, man, it'll be better. Hang in there. Yeah. Or, hey, man, I went through it. You know, it sucks, right? But they would be howling reading the letter, yeah, right? And the Marines would be howling. And, again, it's like, how do you deal with that? But, again, you can't even come close to it if you don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't see them, it's not like they're going to send you a text message or call you and say, hey, you know, I just, you know, had this happen to me. But if you know them and you love them, you watch them every day, you'll know when something's fucked up. And I just don't, you know, it's interesting. You know, and again, one of the statistics that I talk about in post-traumatic winning is, you know, suicides per 100,000. In the 2018 statistics, the Marine Corps is 6 per 100 higher than the Army. Marine Corps number one, Army number two. 6 per 100. And I look, I say, hey, that's leadership problem right there. That is too much distance between leaders and the people they lead. We don't know them. We don't know what's going on in their lives. We don't know them. They feel such distance. They feel such isolation, you know, that they do that. You know, and look, if we were one, you know, or two, you know, it's that, okay, that's a marginal difference. This is not marginal. And every one of us shouldn't be embarrassed about this. And every one of us is part of the solution. And so, anyway, tell me your thoughts on all that.
Well, my experience, you know, is just like Jeff's. When I was a platoon commander, I had open squad base. I only had one married guy, and he stayed in the squad bay. He hated going home. I didn't blame him. It was one of those Filipino marriages. Didn't work out for him. When I was a company commander, I didn't deploy anywhere because I was a three. So I only got the company for like 6 months before I left. That kind of blew. But I spent 6 years as a Navy corpsman, and as a Navy corpsman, the idea of being in a formation was alien. When they had an annual uniform inspection, corpsman would feel it would put out upon to have to actually assemble all the accoutrements for a dress uniform because, you know, we tended not to wear that kind of stuff. We just wore black pants, a white shirt, a black tie, and a lab coat. And it was, like I've described before, I felt during my time in the Navy, I was just working at a hospital and going to school at night, the only exception being that deployment to Beirut, which I found to be really, really exciting. And although I didn't like being on a ship, I wanted to be on the shore. And so yeah, you can run a military without formations, and you end up like the Navy. And then you'll know because nobody's going to have any pride in being a Marine again anymore. I wasn't like people running around saying, hey, I'm a sailor. Who the hell says that? Nobody, right? Nobody. So yeah, you want to be like the Navy or the Air Force or something like that, go ahead. That's a great idea. Go use your cell phones. I wasn't right. Even on active duty when cell phones were popular. Just to me, it's an alien concept not to have formation. How much fun was having formation? For God's sakes, when do you get a chance to fuck with all your guys? I mean, oh my God, it was so much fun sometimes.
You're right, though, man. No one likes to hear. The only time I ever heard that sailor thing was Apocalypse Now, the chief. And you a sailor.
Yes.
So get out of that frizzly army looking shit. And stop
well,
smoking
but,
that
But
joke.
Again, hey, but you know, when that movie's made, right, the Navy used to be a tough place.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cracker Jack uniform, I mean, the go-to-sea Navy, the stay-at-sea Navy, right? We've talked about the last stand of the Tin Can Sailor.
It's amazing you bring that up, Mac, because at the end of the last stand of the Tin Can Sailors, they talk about the last iteration of the Samuel Roberts was in the Gulf in 88, and they were in combat. They hit a mine. Do you remember that part?
I don't.
And it hit a mine. It was catastrophic, and they're like 60. The ship went from being 4,000 tons to like 60,000 tons in like 20 minutes from all the water rushing in, and you know, they're trying to desperately handle it. But and it gave them they took casualties. You know, but and that book was really good at demonstrating the horrific type of casualties you take ship to ship combat, and that was the last. The last part of the last 10 of the Tin Can Sailors is the last Samuel B. Roberts. It didn't sink, but it took some bad damage.
You know, thinking, you know, about the Navy and how tough the Navy, you know, historically the Navy was, one of the things that I heard listening to a number of different things about the USS Johnson when Samuel B. Roberts was closing and the Johnson was now limping, you know, back.
Right.
They see, right, Lieutenant Commander, what's his name?
Copeland was the guy in the Roberts.
Right. Not Copeland. The guy went to the Naval Academy. He's from Oklahoma.
Yeah. Indian guy.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
the only guy at the Medal of Honor, I think.
Right, and so they see him, right, on the aft part of the ship because the ship is now being steered.
Right, that's right. And to steer it by hand. Yeah,
right, by the aft helm. And as they go by the Johnston, right, he looks up and just pops him a quick salute with his right hand.
Wow.
That's kind of fucking balls, right? You know, that's the guy who said, hey, look, you know, we're going to do the damage we can. And what did he say? You know, survival is questionable. He makes some comment like that.
Yeah.
And he had said that. He had said that when he took over the ship. This ship's going to fight. And if that bothers you, you can request a transfer, right? And I'll make sure it happens. And nobody did. And then and they lived up to it. But, I mean, under that kind of duress, right, with that kind of shit going on, he sees you going by, and he knows he's supposed to salute, and he looks at you and pops you a salute. It's like, holy shit, man. But that's what the Navy was.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember in the 80s when the Navy went back to the Cracker Jack uniform?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when Reagan came aboard, they went back to the Cracker Jack, and I want to tell you, that uniform looks great if you've got broad shoulders and a thin waist. But if you do not, it looks like shit. And that's why they went. That's why it didn't last. Particularly when they made the female sailors wear it, because they looked awful. It was hideous. But if you were built like a sailor back in the day, that uniform was nice. I got a picture of me wearing mine on Liberty in Haifa, Israel. I have to send it to you and scan it and send it to you.
Yeah,
that was my all rolled up. Yeah, old Doc Lynch.
Well, and you know what I always remember about that? Like the front had buttons, right? Like it was like a square button, right?
Yeah, 13.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
no.
If you had to take a leak, you had to be very dexterous to
hang out with Doc Lynch. He's got the condoms and the penicillin.
And he's quick on that 15-button fly.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Timmy, you there?
I'm here.
If the CIA is listening.
Iranians.
Yeah, if the CIA is listening, fuck you guys.
Get a haircut.
Get a haircut. All right, final thoughts on a Thursday. Jeff?
I'm cautiously optimistic, but don't want to jinx the good fortune we seem to have had with the strike on Sully Soleimani there.
All right. Timmy, your thoughts? Your final thoughts?
The last bit of information that was of interest to me was Putin having his government resign as he redesigns the Duma restructures Russia. And I got to tell you, I got this report. It says Putin's Russia, Nigeria with snow. And I'll send it to you. It's hysterical. But it's a devastating expose because Putin's got the same problem China does, and that's all the hard capital, the hard currency is fleeing the country, and that is not unsustainable.
No,
but I like Nigeria, man.
Nigeria with snow.
I talked to who was it? Was Nielsen talks about the currency problem that the Chinese have, and I had Grant on talking about it once, and he said trust me, he said that is a huge problem for them, and you know, because that's their money, that is their straight up money. So
it's causing huge speculative bubbles in cities like Melbourne, Australia, and Vancouver, British Columbia. I mean, massive. The locals can't even afford the real estate, and that bubble's going to burst. And when it does, they're going to be losing their money. They have set themselves up for failure in a big way.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, no, but and the Russian thing is, I mean, it's a house of cards. And again, we've talked about this before, but it'll be really interesting to see when Dr. Evil's heir shows up, right? whoever comes to try to, you know, assume the mantle of Dr. Evil, but they don't have Dr. Evil's skills, right? Because all around the world, Putin is playing a bluff game, right?
Absolutely right.
And he's great at it. But the next person that shows up, what, Boris Yeltsin, right? Or who's this dude that has a spot on his head?
Oh, that's Gorbachev.
Gorbachev. Right? I mean, Gorbachev, in my opinion, you know, one of the great leaders of modern time, because he was trying to take Russia in a completely different direction and knew kind of where it had to go, but, you know.
To be in the USSR in the last 20 years of their existence was to be a master of deception, because they were paper tiger big time.
And again, just know this, that, you know, smaller economy than Canada. If you could imagine that, the size of Russia, smaller economy than the size of Canada, smaller than South Korea. And you just
endemic corruption.
Right.
Corruption.
And with all of that, Putin rolls around the world in expensive suits with his gigantic intellect, which he certainly has, and he plays charades, and other nations buy it. And that's, to me, the folly of Germany. If Germany would stand up and be a strong, you know, military partner with a strong economy, you know, they would look at Russia and say, "And you're going to do what?" Yeah, we don't think so. Just go away with your stupid shit.
But, get Colonel Schreiber out of mothballs and send him back there.
All right. Thanks for the visit, guys.
Right. Thank you.
All right, brother. Have a good day.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on a Thursday. News just in. If you're a baseball fan, if you're a Mets fan, Carlos Beltran is out as the manager of the New York Mets, as the cheating scandal that has been much in the news this week continues to run its course. So much speculation, and both the manager in Houston, the manager in Boston, who have both been fired, were supposed to be these great guys. I saw a video last night of the manager of the Houston Astros talking about how this thing about them cheating was just such a bunch of garbage, right? And so. You watch him at a press conference, you know, shaking his head and saying all this stuff. Supposed to be a great guy, man. Supposed to be a great guy, but he fails. And the investigation said he wasn't one of the prime movers, but he didn't stop it. And he knew it was against the rules. The guy who was the prime mover went to Boston. The Red Sox win a World Series. And he's fired. And then the other guy who was a prime mover, and these guys were celebrated as great, great guys and expert sign stealers. Yeah, they were cheating. He just got fired by the New York Mets. So baseball in probably the greatest cheating scandal since, what, the Black Sox scandal of the early 20th century, when Shoeless Joe Jackson was banned for life. So that news continuing to happen. We're going to cast an eye to Russia. Some interesting things happening in Russia. And as Vladimir Putin looks like he has no intention of giving up power, though the Russian Constitution says he can no longer serve, so... Anyway, will he try to do something like President Xi has done in China? Well, he will be proclaimed as president for life. So, we shall see. Anyway, my thanks to Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny for coming on. If you're just joining the program, in hour one, pretty cool. What you'll hear today is a little bit of economic news. I'll start out. There's a guy named Charles Payne, who I like, right? And he's a Fox guy, and but he's an economics guy, and so you'll hear him talking about the deal with China. You'll also hear him talk about Senator Warren's plan to not even have to consult Congress and forgive all student debt. Yeah, because that's your right as an American. It's your right to have your debt forgiven. But I would tell you the thing about the first hour that if I was you, I'd hang around for specifically. So hear the audio that I play from the documentary Bravo. I watched it, the documentary last night. I watched the ending of it, the audio you're going to hear, maybe three times. And pretty amazing stuff. Pretty amazing stuff. Ken and Betty Rogers did an awesome job with that documentary. And as my experience with post-traumatic winning changes me, changes my the prism that I view the world through, you know, I watch that again and it sounds different to me a little bit. So I share that with you and some thoughts relative to it. So don't touch that dial. That's right. This program continues on a Thursday, the 16th day of January in the year 2020. On the heels of Carlos Beltran being fired. All Marine Radio is over and out.